text we pray the Lord be pleased to speak to us from is the book of Acts, chapter 7, Acts 7, verses 1 through 4. I want to speak today on the theme, going all the way with God. Going all the way with God, Acts chapter 7. We're going to begin reading verse 1. Acts chapter 7, begin with verse 1. Then the high priest said, speaking to Stephen, "Are these things so?" And he, Stephen, said, "Brethren and fathers, listen. The God of glory appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia, before he dwelt in Haran, and said to him, 'Get out of your country and from your relatives and come to a land that I will show you.' Then he came out of the land of the Chaldeans and dwelt in Haran. And from there, when his father was dead, he moved him to this land in which you now dwell." Abraham is known as the father of the faithful, the father of faith. When we think of a great man of faith, Abraham heads the list because he is the one upon which the whole doctrine of justification is built as far as an example of it. When Paul is explaining to the Romans this grand truth, the very heartbeat of the gospel, that we are justified by faith alone, he uses Abraham repeatedly as an example. He says, quoting Moses' record of Abraham in Genesis, "And Abraham believed God, and it was accounted unto him for righteousness." So, oh, that we would aspire to be men and women like Abraham, men whom God would say, faith, people of faith. However, Abraham did not start out full of faith. If you're discouraged with the level of faith you seem to exercise, I want to encourage you today that Abraham didn't begin the way you perhaps think. In fact, it seems to me, as we read the sacred record, that Abraham tried to have the best of both worlds. Now, where would I come up with such a blasphemous statement as that? Well, from the Word of God itself. I want you to take you back to Genesis chapter 11. Genesis chapter 11, verses 31 and 32. In this message of Acts 7, Stephen's sermon, he brings out the point that God did not meet Abraham in Haran and tell him then to leave his family, but rather that God met Abraham in his very birthplace, Ur of Chaldees. It was there in the Ur of Chaldees, somewhere in Mesopotamia, present-day Iraq, that Abraham lived, and God first appeared to him. And from there, he told him to leave. We will see, as Stephen shows us, that Haran is just a stopping place, actually a diversion, a detour that God never intended. Look at Genesis chapter 11, beginning with verse 31. "And Terah took his son Abram," this is before his name changed, "and his grandson Lot, the son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law Sarai, his son Abram's wife. And they went out with them from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to the land of Canaan, and they came to Haran and dwelt there. So the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran." Now, here, the sacred record leads us to believe that it was Abraham's dad, Terah, that left the Ur of Chaldees and brought all of his family, including Abraham and Sarah. And that's why they are in Haran. And then when you move right into the very next chapter, the very next verse, chapter 12, verse 1. "Now the Lord had said to Abram," and if you're not careful reading, you'd think, now that he's in Haran, God speaks to him. But Stephen tells us, no, that's not the proper order of events. No, past tense. "Now the Lord had said." In other words, Moses is referring back to the Ur of Chaldees, not in his present situation, Haran. God first revealed himself to Abraham back in Mesopotamia. Now the Lord had said to Abram, not Terah his father, get out of your country, from your family, and from your father's house to a land that I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. In other words, Moses is showing us that God spoke to him way back in Ur of Chaldees. And finally, he's now going to obey the word of the Lord. But does he? Does he fully and completely obey God's word to him? No. Look at verse 10 of the same 12th chapter. No, excuse me. The same verse we just finished reading here in verse 4. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. God specifically said that he was to leave his family. We see on two different occasions, Abraham obeyed God, left Ur of Chaldees, but what did he do? He brought his dad and his nephew with him, and they settled in Haran. And then when Terah, his father, finally died, then he would now completely try to fulfill the word of the Lord. But here again, oh, Abraham, not a man of great faith, but of little or weak faith, does not obey God, but takes Lot with him. Now, why is that an eventful thing to bring to your attention? Because Abraham is not obeying God fully nor completely. He wants his family near. He doesn't want to say goodbye to his family and forsake them and go to a place he doesn't know, a strange land. He wants to have the security of his family around him. So he convinces dad and nephew to go with him. And now that dad's gone, what does he do? Instead of leaving Lot, which would have been so much better for Abraham had he done so, he brings him all with him. Now, why would I say it's better if he had left him? Well, you continue reading in the 12th chapter of Genesis that there were issues. And into the 13th chapter, you'll notice that there's a dispute between Abram's servants and Lot's servants over a land grab, because the land was too small to take care of both families and herds. Later on, Abram has to leave the comfort of his own home and go rescue Lot and his family from the kings who had invaded Sodom and Gomorrah. He was reaping what he had sown because he would not trust the Lord completely and do what God told him to do. Go back again to Genesis chapter 12. And again, we see the weakness of Abraham's faith in verse 10. Genesis chapter 12 and verse 10. Now there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to dwell there, for there the famine was severe in that land. Here's my question. Did God tell Abraham to go down to Egypt in the severity of the famine? Not at all. There's no indication whatsoever that God told him to go to Egypt. Now, why is that important? And I bring that to your attention. Because here is an example where the great father of faith didn't have faith in God. Did what some of us have done. Doubted God and leaned into our own understanding. Did not acknowledge God in all of his ways, and therefore was not directed by God in his paths. He went to Egypt. God said, I'm going to take you to the land that I'm going to give you, and Egypt wasn't it. He disobeyed God. What happened in Egypt? Do you remember? He had to lie, sin, in order to protect his own hide, and say that Sarai was not his wife, but his sister, which was a half-truth because she was half-sister. And you saw the ordeal there. Faith, the father of faith, didn't have a real faithful beginning. But God got him there. We here at Oak Grove Baptist Church believe that we are to trust the Lord with all of our hearts and not lean unto our own understanding, but in all of our ways acknowledge Him, and that He will direct our paths. This passage, Proverbs chapter 3, verse 5 and 6, promises that God will truly guide and direct us. And I am staking everything on that. And I want you to do so with me. We also here believe that God is always acting in our lives. That's something we've come to believe. He's always active, even when it seems that God is silent. We know He is not idle. Well, I'll never forget the day I received a phone call from my good friend Paul Washer. It was January 2001, and I had just only a week or two before come out of the worst spiritual battle of my life, before and since then. The phone rang that day, and Paul invited me to accompany him on a mission trip to Romania, where we would be teaching in a pastor's conference. Now, there was nothing unusual about that. For the years that I had known Paul up to that point, he had invited me often to accompany him on one of his mission trips, and every time I said no, I declined. I had no desire to leave the safe and comfortable confines of this country and enter a strange and less prosperous land. I had no desire whatsoever. But on this particular day, I shocked myself when I heard myself say, yes. I'm serious. I was stunned when I heard those words come out of my mouth. And after I hung up, I got on my knees and began to weep before the Lord and say, oh, Father, get me out of this. You know I didn't mean that. I tried to figure out how I could call Paul and wiggle out of it. I think I did one time, did try, and I called, but somehow didn't find the way to wiggle. Wasn't enough room. There was no wiggle room. He was going to hold me to it. Can you imagine for a moment what it's like to ride in a car and your guide tell you when you enter every city, town, and village, there is no evangelical church here? Can you imagine how you'd feel? Do you think you would feel heartbroken as you looked into the faces of the people standing in the streets of those cities, towns, and villages, realizing that those people have nothing to look forward to? That when they die, they're going to enter into the torment of an eternal hell separated from God. Do you think you'd be heartbroken? Do you think there would be any compassion elicited from your heart? I believe that you would have the same experience I had when that literally did happen. When Florine would take me from town to town and village to village and say those words, there's no evangelical church here. And it seemed like it was every city, town. Only now and again would he say, yes, there is one here or maybe two at the most. In a town of 50,000 people, I remember he was saying to me, there are two evangelical churches that he was aware of. What does this have to do with Abraham and going all the way with God? Well, I want to share with you what God began in those days. Many of you have already heard this more than once, but let me, please, would you indulge me one more time to share how God has brought us to this point? Because no matter what happens, you need to understand whatever happens to me is a part of you, and whatever happens to you is a part of me, because that's how church life works. That trip changed my life forever. Immediately, we established a point in time to go back in the fall. Went back by myself right after 9/11. We went back the following spring. We did a pastor's conference. And then we started doing at least one or two a year. We brought Florine and Denise here on several occasions. And all of those years, God began to develop a vision in my brother Florine's heart and in my heart. How can we change or remedy the situation that every village and town you drive through, there are no evangelical churches? This cannot be. This cannot stand, and we do nothing. And so we began to pray, we would talk, and what you hold in your hand is the outcome of those years of praying. This, if you stop and think about that, 2001, 2013, 12 years in the making. God doesn't get in a hurry. He doesn't get in a hurry. For 12 years, this thing has been brewing, and we've prayed, and we've waited upon God, and we believe now the time has come. This brochure is produced by your mission board here, and I want to just share, go through it just real briefly with you, what the vision of this mission board and this church that they are recommending to you, and you will consider in a few weeks. As you open up this brochure in the first fold of the tri-fold, you will see a heading, Why a Fellowship? What is Romania Missionary Fellowship? Well, let me tell you first of all about Oak Grove Missionary Fellowship. Oak Grove Missionary Fellowship is what we're calling a partnership between us and American churches that will catch this same vision. We're calling it a fellowship because we want it to be a partnership. Not just us doing solo. Not just us calling the shots and asking people to give money. But truly a partnership with a mission board having administrative responsibilities. But other churches coming alongside of us because we realize that what God is calling us to do is bigger than one church. As you see this vision unfold, we will need other churches to come alongside. But guess what? They need us too. What we will be providing is the leadership and the vision to lead and to help these pastors of local churches to get their congregations involved in fulfilling the Great Commission. A week ago Thursday, we had our pastors fellowship and I shared this vision with them. And I did so with the intent to let them know that we're not against mission programs or societies or even the cooperative program. We thank God for all of these other agencies. And they are necessary and needful, but they can't do everything. When it comes to, for example, Southern Baptist giving through the cooperative program, it's an excellent and awesome tool in order to get men and women to the field, and they do not have to worry about raising their support. It's an awesome thing that they can go and know that they're going to be financially taken care of. That is a blessing. If you asked any missionary, most would say they would rather have that kind of a situation than having to raise their own support. It seems to be so much more ideal. However, there is a weakness. Even the Southern Baptist Convention is recognizing this in the last few years, that it doesn't really help local churches to go and fulfill the Great Commission. The Great Commission says that we are to go, not just send. In fact, in the Great Commission, it never says send men to make disciples. It tells all of us to go in some way, some form, some fashion. And friends, if this church is to plant churches where there are no churches, we have to assume the responsibility of the word go and bring it alongside the word send. That's what this vision is about. And as I shared with those pastors, in the days, weeks, years to come, we will have opportunities for lay people to be able to go where churches are being planted and do things, evangelistic things, loving acts of service kinds of things that will help attract people to the hearing of the gospel. Things that you can do. Things that you are doing daily on your job site or perhaps in your hobbies and activities that you can bring to the mission field and help church planters plant a church. That's what this vision is all about. So that's why we call it a partnership. We're inviting other pastors and churches to get involved and go themselves, where lay people will have opportunities, as well as those pastors, to know their missionaries, to know the men that they have helped train and help plant a local church. It just won't be a budget trying to meet for missions giving. There will be literally hands and feet to this vision. On the last side, the right side of your brochure, how this works. Let me just go through this real quickly. You see number one, and it specifically is referring to a city there. We have, Florine and I have recently discussed this, and we are not wanting to hinder the work of God or His ways, which sometimes are mysterious. And so we are just going to simply say the planting of churches is our number one vision, not necessarily where. So just know that there is a correction there. But we do, the whole ministry of this is a church planting movement. Why? Because that's the way the book of Acts is. All of the evangelism of the New Testament was a church planting movement. The apostles, and not just the apostles, deacons. Philip is a deacon. And where does he go? To Samaria. And he preaches and shares the gospel. And even lay people, when persecution began in Acts chapter 8, the Bible says they left Jerusalem, Judea, to get out from under the persecution. Wherever they went, they proclaimed, they preached Jesus. Even just, quote, ordinary Christians. God sent them. So this is a church planting movement. The way we're going to do this, and have already started, is by supporting the existing evangelical churches that are there. For example, the last pastors' conference we did in Romania, we shared this vision with Romanian pastors to about 50, maybe 60. And we asked them and shared how we would teach them and train them to mentor and disciple their own men whom God calls to preach. And asked them, would they be interested and ready to do something like that and be involved in that kind of training? Every one of them wanted to do that. When we went to Moldova just this past year, the Republic of Moldova, we met with the president of the Baptist Union, equivalent to our SBC president. And we shared this vision with him, 410 Baptist churches in the whole country. There's 48 Baptist churches in the counties of Ballard and McCracken. There's probably 400 churches in the state of Kentucky, Baptist churches, or more. This whole nation, just 410. And when we shared this vision with this man, he said to me, there's not a man that I can name right now, those 400 men, that probably know how to disciple men to become preachers of the gospel. And he endorsed this ministry. In fact, he wanted to give us 10 names immediately to start working with. And we said, no, we don't. We want God to call those men. But this is the enthusiasm we have met already. So we're going to support those existing churches. The goal will be to help Romanian churches do their own missions through church planting and make it their aim, because right now, that is not their aim. Most churches, the evangelical, are doing everything they can to survive themselves. They have a very inward focus. When you begin to talk to missions to many Romanian pastors, they think of people coming to their country to do missions. They have difficulty seeing themselves doing missions. So the mindset has to be changed. We have to teach and instruct that God called them to do the Great Commission, and it can be done. So as you see under number two, we're going to have mentor training for pastors to encourage and help pastors to have a dominant role in the preparation of preachers. By the way, that's the Bible's way of doing it. Did you know that the American church did quite well for almost 1,600 years, well, it wasn't 1,600 years, but let's say Christianity did quite well for almost 1,600 years without one seminary. Seminaries are a relatively modern thing when you look at the whole scope of church history. So how did pastors and preachers and missionaries get trained? Under the pastor of a local church. Pastor of a local church did exactly what Paul tells Timothy to do in 2 Timothy chapter 2. You find capable men and you tell them what I told you, so that they can then, in turn, tell somebody else who will be capable to teach. That's the system God established. And it works. So we want to encourage a mission vision for those churches and train those men to do that. Thirdly, we want to create a network of pastors. Pastors need encouragement and regular fellowship. So what we are going to do is create Romania Missionary Fellowship. Like we have on the American side, Oak Grove Missionary Fellowship, there will be a Romanian Missionary Fellowship where these pastors will be involved voluntarily. And just like on the second Thursday of every other month, we have a pastor's fellowship here. They will be having him in strategic places in Romania, the Republic of Moldova. And Brother Florine, who will become as an employee of the Oak Grove Mission Board, as our director of Romania Missionary Fellowship, he will go to these groups and he will begin to conduct pastor's fellowships just like we do here for their encouragement and their instruction on how to train and disciple men. So there's going to be a network. And when I was there in June, part of the purpose of that trip was to begin to establish the groundwork for these networks. And lastly, we want to create a missions training and church planting center there in the city of Yash. There are things that pastors won't be able to do. There are just certain things some of these men cannot do that need themselves deeper theological training. Brother Florine has that capability and knowledge, and he will then, in the city of Yash, have times where he will do intensive training with these men. We also have discussed perhaps more than one training center, one in the country of Moldova, another one there in Romania. But these are this is the vision that we have. Now, as I've laid this out to you, let me share with you how this intertwines with the life of Abraham. Abraham heard the call of God and he responded. But he didn't respond with all of his heart in absolute surrender. As I said earlier, he tried to manage the best of both worlds. He took his family and disobeyed God. He left the promised land and went to Egypt when God did not tell him. But eventually God made this man a man of faith. I believe this is the time in which we are now to advance on this vision and bring it to pass. Will we leave and go completely and fully trusting the Lord? Abraham caused himself a great deal of grief. When he went to Egypt, something significant happened other than his sin of lying and betraying his own wife to save himself. Something else happened in Egypt. And perhaps you've never put this together, but a person left with Abraham and Sarah from Egypt, and her name was Hagar. That's where Hagar comes into the picture. Had they never gone to Egypt in disobedience or lack of faith, there would never have been a Hagar, because the Bible says she was a servant of Sarah. And when they leave Egypt, the Pharaoh gives them not only cattle and silver and gold, but servants, it says. And Hagar is an Egyptian. Today, the problem that we are experiencing in this world with Arabs and Muslims against Jews and Arabs and Muslims against Christians, and even in some places Christians against them, is a result of the disobedience and the lack of faith of Abraham and Sarah. Friends, here's the connection so plainly. If God is telling us to do this, if this is where we have seen His activity and His blessings, and we do not step out in absolute trust that He will perform His good work through us, then there are consequences. Life will not stay the same. You can't say no to God and think your life is going to stay the way it is now. It will change. Yes, it will change if we say yes. But it'll change if you say no. Remember Hagar. Remember Abraham, who was not always faithful. The question is, are we ready to trust God? The Oak Grove Baptist Mission Board, after 3 months of prayer, says that we want to do this now. Now's the time. The cost of just hiring Brother Florine is going to be about $2,000 a month. Those are just bare minimum expenses. That keeps him in home, utilities, a vehicle, and gas and insurance, and just a little discretionary income. Not much. He was willing to live off of $1,500, which that was just the total of his bills, monthly bills, period. He was willing to do that, and I said, no, I want you to have a little extra. You never know what might happen, and then you can give. I mean, if all of your expenses and all of your income is exactly the same, where do you have to give? So it will be $2,000 a month. Oak Grove Baptist Church's mission board is recommending to this congregation that we pay $800 of that a month. $800 a month. Where's the other going to come from? From the support of other churches here and in Europe. After I gave the talk, I want to encourage you. God's already doing things. After I gave the talk at the pastor's fellowship, asking that if they would allow me to come and share this vision with their churches, I had one pastor already scheduled for sometime in the month of February, we haven't set a definite date, to come to his church and share this vision with them. They want to be involved in something like this. And I'm sure there'll be others from that same group who will have to go back and go through the appropriate channels in order to extend an invitation, but I believe it's coming. Not only that, but there are many people throughout the United States, Romanian churches and pastors who know this couple, Florine and Denise, and then there are people in Europe that they know that they can contact. We are believing God for $2,000 a month to meet His expenses, but we're also believing God for more because we know that there's going to come a day when we're going to have two men, the first two men, and what a day that will be, when they're ready now, having been trained to go and plant that first church. We're going to need monies to support them as they undergo a church plant. So this is the vision. Are we ready to be faithful even when it doesn't make sense or we don't know what God will do? I say yes. Invariably, though, the question comes, but what about right here? We have many people in our own city, our own county, our own area, who are going to spend an eternity separated from God in everlasting hell. Why are we going halfway across the world to plant churches when there's a great need here? I welcome that question. In fact, I told pastors to make sure if they really share the vision, you should get that question. If you didn't share the vision right, you won't get that question. I welcome that question, and here's the answer. I've already got the missionaries for here. It's you. The answer is you. We don't need to train missionaries and build missionary training centers. However many adults and young people that I have here that are saved, you are the missionaries for this city, for this county, for this area. And by the way, you have incomes that support your missionary efforts. We don't have to spend a dime. It's a great program. I may be using humor a little bit, but I'm very serious. The answer to that question is not me and a new program. The answer to that question is you. You getting on your face before God and saying, you've called me to be your missionary, your witness, your light in my home, in my neighborhood, at work, at school. Lord, I need your power. I need, first of all, your burden for this. I need a passion for this. And Lord, wherever there's a passion, I know there is an endowment. There is an endowment, a supply of grace and power to do it. You are the answer to that question. We are to do both. We are to reach here and to reach there. And now's the time. Will we go all the way with God? I'm going to ask you in the next few weeks, I believe the Lord is asking this, to begin to say, how can I reorder my world, my life, so I can live what God is telling our church to do? What do I have to get up and leave behind? What structural changes will have to be made? What priorities have to be rearranged, if not some eliminated, in order to see this vision come to pass? Because if you leave today and you say, you make the mistake, Pastor, that's your vision. God gave you that to you. Who do I represent when I go to Romania? I represent Christ and you. You send me there. This has been our vision. And it's time for all of us to go. To go. Will you go all the way with God? And in that way, exceed Abraham, who struggled with God's call all of his life until he became an old man. It was not until he was 99 years of age, 25 years after what I've read to you today, did he finally say, "Yes, Lord." And then Genesis 15 says, "Then Abraham believed God and was accounted to him for righteousness." I've always wondered, why then? Because he left the Ur of Chaldees. He did go. He did believe God and all the visions that God showed him of the stars, when God would say, "I'll make you a father of a great nation and your descendants will be like the stars." He believed that evidently because he did leave home. But why then? Because then Abraham completely rested in God and trusted in Him with all of his heart, not leaning to his own understanding anymore. There were no more Hagar's arrangements. There were no more trying to help God, trying to have the best of both worlds. It was absolute surrender. And God said, "I'll count that to you as righteousness." Righteousness before God is absolute surrender in faith. May God help us to go all the way with Him.